Doctor Who, Short Trips, Lost and Found. Written by Penelope Faith. Read by Annika Wills. Silica, alumina, lime, iron oxide, and... The doctor crumbled the dust between his fingers and sniffed. Magnesia. He took a deep breath and coughed. Nitrogen. Lots of nitrogen. He took another breath and swirled it around his nostrils as if he were tasting wine. And more importantly, oxygen. Could be Earth, said Polly, grabbing tightly onto Ben's arm as she stumbled over the rubble-strewn ground. It is Earth, said the doctor as he bent down to pick up a larger piece of the debris. And these are bricks. Great, Polly laughed. Are you disappointed, Ben? Of course. He let go of Polly's arm and looked around the landscape. Among the debris he could now make out walls, doors, and strips of ripped wallpaper that provided the only vibrant colour. What happened here, Doctor? It looks like a bomb site. I think that's exactly what it is, the doctor replied. Not travelled very far then, have we? Ben kicked some bricks around. We seem to have only gone as far as my childhood. And mine, said Polly. But playing on bomb sites was more something the boys did. Because there was a lot of bomb damage in deepest Hampshire. Polly gave Ben a sweet, but not entirely genuine, smile. I expect you were always hoping to find something horrible, she said. Yeah, said Ben, never did, though. He wasn't going to tell her about the rotting animal corpses he and his friends found on a regular basis. How curious. The doctor was bending down, attempting to shift some bricks, like a puppy digging a hole. What have you found? Asked Ben. He'd been waiting for the doctor to discover something out of place, something that might turn into an adventure. A tin of beans, said the doctor, finally managing to unearth his discovery. He held it up, the deep turquoise blue of the tin's wrapper highlighting its clash with its surroundings. Ben was audibly disappointed. Polly, however, laughed. How long has that been there? Been there, said Ben, and Polly gave him one of her regular playful slaps. Not long by the looks of it. It's in pristine condition. The doctor held the tin up to his ear and shook it. You won't hear the sea, said Ben. Someone must have dropped it, said Polly. Oh! She sat down on the remnants of a small wall and held her head. I've just remembered something. You all right, Duchess? What is it, Polly? The doctor looked over, still playing with the tin, moving it from one hand to another, turning it upside down, shaking it. I remembered the first time I saw tinned beans. Ben laughed. I went up to London with my mother. I was six, I think. Yes, six. A lot of it looked like this. She looked around. Yes, I remember. And that was the day I lost... Don't laugh. Promise you won't laugh, Ben.
I'll try, he said.
My bear. Ben smiled so widely it was only a millimetre away from becoming a laugh. Go on. The doctor was sitting next to her now. It was in Henrik's. My mother took me to Henrik's.
Henrik's? The department store? They sold baked beans in Henrik's. Really? I thought it was posher than that.
Ben was really laughing now. They did, continued Polly. There was a big display of them in the food hall. This was not long after the war. We still had rationing. People like to see
food.
Yes, Ben, food. Don't you remember?
I never went window shopping for food, he said.
But he felt suddenly hungry, as if re-experiencing the dominant feeling of those starved years.
The bear, asked the doctor. Tell me about the bear.
I lost him. In Henrik's. That's all I remember. Beans and losing my bear.
Did your bear have a name?
The doctor was engaged in his usual practice of talking while seemingly distracted by looking for something in one of his many pockets.
No,
Polly sounded quite firm. I thought, well, I believed at the time, wrongly as it turned out, that if I didn't give him a name, then I would never lose him. You see, I wouldn't be able to call out for him, so he could never leave me.
Her voice was shaky, and she was failing not to be moved. She didn't want to cry. A grown woman who travelled through time and space, crying over a childhood toy.
She swallowed hard and took a deep breath.
Bears, dolls, toys, they don't get lost, said the doctor. They go missing.
Polly opened her mouth to speak, but changed her mind. Instead, she tightly gripped Ben's hand with such force he had to, carefully, he didn't want to upset her, relieve the pressure on his fingers. They were both distracted by a faint wailing, one they had already been vaguely aware of, increasing its volume and becoming something more like a shriek.
What?
Polly didn't get a chance to finish her question before witnessing the doctor drop the tin of beans with an accompanying ouch, then blowing on his hand as if to cool it.
Interesting, he said, and picked the tin up again,
this time using the hem of his coat to hold it.
Did that horrible sound come from in there?
Ben asked, already knowing what the answer would be.
Yes, said the doctor firmly, it did.
Is there something trapped in there?
This time Ben wasn't so sure of the answer.
Possibly, replied the doctor,
placing the tin on a flat surface and walking around it, looking down on it and bending down to touch it with a fingertip, withdrawing and moving on until it looked like he was performing a strange sort of dance. Polly giggled.
Nice move, she said. Perhaps we should have some music.
Ah, yes, music.
The doctor took his recorder out of his coat pocket and gently started to blow. First of all, clearing it of dust, then blowing harder until the notes came, soft and soothing. The wailing stopped.
Ah, said the doctor.
He lowered himself to the ground and sat, cross-legged, playing an unrecognisable tune on his recorder without stopping for breath. A sound, not unlike that of a recorder, emanated from the tin, slowly building in volume until it became like an echo.
Oh, this is good, the doctor said, his playing getting more and more feverish.
Are you communicating?
Polly's sense of awe and wonder was, as so often before, brought down with a bump by Ben's laughter.
Come with me, he said. You see things you never dreamt of, he said.
Well, he was right about that, talking to baked beans. Do you speak bean, doctor?
Enough to know that they're in trouble, the doctor said seriously. Come on.
He picked up the tin and held it in his hands. It was gently vibrating. He marched off. Ben shrugged, held out his hand to Polly, and they followed the doctor. Within minutes, the landscape became more built up, less desolate, and more like the London that was familiar to them both. They joined crowds of people, some ambling and gazing longingly into shop windows, some, like the doctor, marching with purpose towards a specific destination.
Some adventure, said Ben, dutifully waiting at a crossing for the traffic lights to change.
Where are we going, Doctor? Polly asked.
Where I'm told, he replied, and you'd do well to do the same.
Polly sighed. She would have liked to be able to take in the sights, or rather, take time to luxuriate in the memories that were being triggered. Memories of a long-ago trip with her mother, the very trip during which she'd lost her beloved bear. The memories were threatening to overwhelm her, so similar the city looked, sounded, and smelled like the city of her childhood. Her parents always referred to Londoners as brave. Brave Londoners, they would say. They've put up with so much. Polly remembered, as a child, searching the crowds for visible signs of bravery. A woman with brightly coloured gloves was definitely brave. An old man, barely visible behind a fog of pipe smoke, he was brave. But a young woman, daring to wear a full skirt with an obvious petticoat when almost everyone else still wore close-fitting drab coats over faded floral dresses, well, she was the bravest of them all. And Polly found herself scanning the streets as they followed the doctor, looking for those signs that had brought the city back to life after the war. The doctor stopped abruptly. He handed Ben the baked bean tin. "Can you hear anything?" he asked. Ben held the tin up to his ear, winking at Polly as he did so.
"No? Maybe we've arrived."
"I know where we are, Doctor!" Polly felt a surge of excitement that pressed against the back of her eyes. "Just turn here. There!"
"Where are we?" asked Ben.
"Henrik," said Polly. The three of them stopped and slowly looked upwards at the building in front of them.
"Not very impressive," said Ben.
"It was damaged," said Polly, half noticing, half remembering, boarded up windows, hand-painted temporary signs, a world-famous department store, carrying on regardless, representing, like the Queen who'd refused to leave her city while bombs fell on it, the indisputable bravery of wartime London.
"I remember it so well."
Polly was very close to tears.
"You know, Duchess," Ben stood in front of her, face to face, "if this is where you lost your bear, how about we try and find it?"
"Is that possible, Doctor?"
"Theoretically, yes, but here comes the but. It may not have gone missing yet. It depends on what date it is, you see."
As Polly tried to get a grip on her disappointment, a young woman brushed past them, her full skirt and petticoat skimming Polly's legs. She seemed to be taking up so much more room on the pavement than everybody else. As Polly watched her, memory and present moment fused, and she thrilled at the woman's bravery, and then heard her mother's voice urging her to stay close, as the store was bound to be busy and she didn't want to get lost, did she? And Polly cried out,
"It's today! It's this day! This is the day I lost him!"
"Then we'd better go and find him," said Ben, dragging her by the arm through the revolving doors, not waiting to hear either her response or the doctor's necessary caution.
The doctor stood outside watching customers enter and leave. The tin, which he had in one of his pockets, seemed to be warming up again. He took a step closer to the door and felt a definite change in temperature. He stepped back, and the tin cooled down.
"Only one thing for it," he muttered,
and went into the shop, wincing slightly as the heat of the tin burned against his thigh. He headed straight for the food hall. The large display of baked beans looked quite out of place in the vast tiled hall, where dead pheasants hung from hooks, impressive Stiltons spilled out of stone jars, and piles of ruby red tomatoes filled the air with their earthy sweet smell. A smart woman with a neat bun presided over the tins, seemingly inured to the oppressive heat emanating from them. As was the woman she was serving, a young housewife, smartened up for her trip to town, sporting a flowered fabric that looked more suitable for upholstery than dressmaking. A crocodile handbag hung neatly from her arm as she listened politely to the saleswoman explaining to her this miracle of convenience food that was the baked bean. The doctor tried not to look like he was intruding. He was trying not to be noticed at all, but this was becoming increasingly difficult as the tin in his pocket was beginning to vibrate. He wanted to try communicating with it again, but knew enough to surmise that if he took it out of his pocket, he was likely to be accused of shoplifting, and that would not be a good move. The young woman had been persuaded into purchasing not only the beans, but some canned soup, also on display. The sales assistant was thrilled, and she gathered the goods and led the shopper towards the cashier. The doctor took the opportunity and placed the tin from his pocket among those on display. There was almost a purr from the tins. The doctor started to smile and got his recorder out and began to play. The heat lessened and the tin somehow seemed to relax. And then from behind him, on a shelf among bottles of tomato ketchup and brown sauce, a larger tin than the others gave out the most human sound yet, a deep, troubled sigh. And then it spoke.
Thank you,
it said.
My pleasure, the doctor replied. Anything else I can do?
Can you help us?
I can try. What would you like me to do?
We seem to have got into a bit of a pickle,
whatever that was inside the tin said. The doctor laughed.
Oh, very good. I like that.
He glanced over to a row of jars, proudly claiming to contain a kind of pickle that apparently went well with a ploughman's.
We've been trapped in these blasted tins.
By whom?
They think they're so smart. Unfortunately, they're right about that, I'm afraid. And dangerous. Very dangerous. Are you on your own?
No, said the doctor. I have my two companions.
Two? Good. The more, the better. We need help. I'm glad we found you.
Yes, I was led here. Smartly done.
Thank you.
The doctor looked around, suddenly aware that it may look odd to others that he was conversing with a tin of beans. But as far as the shoppers were concerned, there was merely an eccentrically dressed man playing a recorder in the corner of the food hall reserved for tinned goods, and none of them seemed to be bothered.
Are they here in Henrik's? The doctor asked.
Yes, but I'm not sure where.
Can you give me a little more information?
The pause that followed spoke of reluctance. The doctor said nothing. He just waited. Eventually, he got a response. We have something of theirs, something that they need. They've imprisoned us till we give it back.
And you're not going to?
We can't. If we did, they would destroy everything we know to be sacred.
I've always thought destruction a rather senseless way to gain power. What would there be left to be in control of?
So you'll help?
Yes. Excellent. Now look, all these people aren't going to make it easy. Would you mind very much if we froze them for a while? You and your companions will be spared. Right, here we go.
Horizontal lights in all shades of turquoise oozed out from the tins as if their labels were dissolving and turning to gas. Within seconds, the mist had cleared. The doctor looked around. The shoppers and sales assistants had all frozen still, mid-step, mid-sentence, mid-breath. The shop became disconcertingly quiet.
Splendid work, the doctor said warily. Now, come with me. And he dropped the tin of beans into his coat pocket.
Out of nowhere, a child appeared. She was running towards him with her head turned behind her. Not looking where she was going, she was bound to bump into something. That something was the doctor.
Whoa, whoa, young lady, he said.
He held her by the shoulders.
What happened to everyone? The little girl said. And who are you?
Now this is interesting, said the doctor. Why are you still moving?
I'm lost.
The doctor looked down at the large tin of beans.
Can you explain?
No, it said.
The doctor bent down and looked the girl directly in the eye. She was blonde, pretty, and her hair peeking out from her hat was plaited with a dull brown ribbon. He knew this girl. A little girl who preferred not to wear pink ribbons.
What's your name?
Her answer was the one he was anticipating.
Polly. Polly Wright. I'm here with my mother and my bear, and now I've lost them both.
Oh. On the fifth floor of Henrik's, Polly and Ben were in the toy department, staring intently, or at least Polly was, at a display of various styles of stuffed bears. No, Polly said, it's none of them, but then it didn't come from here.
Where did it come from?
Father Christmas. And don't say a word! Ben was on the verge of laughter.
North Pole, then.
Polly turned away from him. You're supposed to be helping me.
Sorry, Paul. I know he meant a lot to you.
Ben struck a thinking pose, which essentially consisted of screwing up his nose.
What about, you know, maybe...
You have approximately 3 seconds to come up with a useful suggestion, Ben Jackson.
Got it.
There must be a lost property office. Maybe we should try there. Ben relaxed with obvious pleasure and relief of having thought of something.
You know, Ben, said Polly, I think that's one of your better ideas. Just in the nick of time.
Ben took Polly's hand to lead her away. A woman holding a jigsaw box, examining the picture closely, didn't move when they approached.
Ben, that woman, she's not moving.
You're right. Or him. He pointed to an elderly gentleman trying out a yo-yo, which was dangling at an impossible angle.
Where's the doctor? We should find him. I don't like this.
Ben took her hand and led Polly towards the lifts. They were as frozen as the attendants inside them. As always seemed to be the case, the more troubled Polly became, the more enlivened Ben got. This was the fulfilment of the doctor's promise of thrills. As Polly got more frightened, Ben grew more fearless, until reaching the point that safeguarding her became a necessary element of the adventure. Polly, for her part, also recognised this dynamic and allowed it, because sometimes, when faced with a terrifying unknown, it was quite nice to have someone take your hand and hold it.
The stairs, over there!
Ben practically dragged Polly away, dodging customers and sales assistants, all motionless, rendered almost indistinguishable from the mannequin standing guard in the store.
Through here, said Ben, pushing open a door marked staff only. These stairs only go up. We left the doctor downstairs.
Ben tried to turn around, find another route.
Let's try anyway, said Polly.
You're thinking about your bear, aren't you? Did he mean so much to you?
Ben didn't really need an answer to that question.
The doctor will find us,
Polly said with a confidence that disguised her fear and led the way up the stairs. After two flights, they found themselves outside an elaborate brass-handled door that led to offices. They walked slowly, carefully, along the corridor, whispering the names etched on the frosted glass doors.
Edwin Whipple, Chief Accountant.
Marjorie Manning, Senior Buyer.
Evelyn Ames, Chairman.
They tiptoed past the typing pool, a score of secretaries with fingers crouched on silent keys. Polly's heart racing a little bit faster with each step. Then finally, the last door on the left.
Lost and found.
Ready? Asked Ben. Polly, unwilling to show how frightened she was, pushed past Ben and, fully expecting the room to be locked, turned the doorknob. The doorknob turned easily.
Here, said Ben, taking control of the door. Let me...
The low humming was immediately obvious, as was the amber light, which didn't seem to have a particular source. Ben flicked the light switch, but nothing happened. As their eyes became accustomed to the strange glow, small dots of deeper intensity became visible. Polly could see that the room was furnished like a library with walls of shelves dividing it up. The shelves were crowded with mainly stuffed animals of all sorts, dogs, rabbits, elephants, and, of course, bears. Panda bears, brown bears, polar bears, small bears, large bears, bears loved until they were bald. They all sat up straight, they all stared ahead, and all of their eyes glowed deep orange.
Can you see your bear, Paul?
Polly scanned the shelves in front of her, shaking her head. Then she became braver and walked up and down the corridors created by the shelving. Did no one lose bags or umbrellas or musical instruments? The toys all stared straight ahead, alert as if poised for battle. Then she saw it, yellowy golden, the same colour as her retriever, Belle, the right ear falling forward so the darker velvet of its inside wasn't visible, the same velvet that it had on the base of its paws and in a small strip down its front, and the nose, wonky, skew-whiff, where Polly had rescued it from Belle's mouth. Without calling for Ben, she put out her hand to take it off the shelf. But she was prevented by something she couldn't see or feel. She tried again. This time she felt something, but it wasn't the soft fur of her old toy. She pushed against whatever it was, but she didn't have anywhere near the strength needed to get her bear back.
Ben! Ben! Here!
Ben found her almost in tears.
I can't get it, she said. There's something stopping me. You try. There, that one with the half-chewed nose.
Of course your bear looks like that, Ben said with such affection that Polly would quite happily have kissed him. Ben put his hand out towards Polly's bear. But unlike Polly's more gentle rebuff, Ben fell backwards as if he'd been punched. As he steadied himself in the small space, the invisible force gathered more power and confined them even further.
Okay, he said. We need the doctor.
Where are we going?
Young Polly tripped along, trying to keep up with the doctor, occasionally managing to grab hold of his coat.
It's not two Pollys, he muttered to himself. It's one Polly in two time zones. Oh, they mustn't meet.
He looked down at the child happily following him, her red berry threatening to slip off.
Ooh, I should like a hat like that, he mused for a moment, despite himself.
What's that? Polly asked. I can hear someone calling.
Then the doctor heard it. It was the other Polly calling for him, her voice travelling through the empty floors of the department store.
Doctor! Doctor!
Oh, dear, he said.
Are you a doctor?
Yes, he replied, but not the sort you're thinking of.
Don't you make things better?
You know what, Polly, the doctor said, kneeling down to be on her level. That might be a very good description of what I do.
Polly smiled, and as she did so, the ground began to vibrate. She threw herself into the doctor's arms.
What's happening?
She asked.
It's begun! It's begun!
The tin screamed. But all Polly heard was a sound she'd become familiar with.
It's an air raid!
Come, said the doctor.
Where are we going?
Asked young Polly.
To help my friends, said the doctor.
And he went in search of the Polly that was calling out for him, with a worry that what she feared and what was frightening the tin of beans was very probably the same thing. As they reached the seventh floor and Polly's cries for help were at the strongest, the doctor turned to young Polly to suggest that she stayed exactly where she was, by the lifts, and he would find out what was happening. But before he could get to the end of his sentence, Polly fell out of the lost and found and ran towards him.
Doctor! Doctor! It's the toys!
The missing toys?
We've found them, all of them, even mine. Will mine be there?
Polly noticed the child for the first time. She became very still and stared, screwing her eyes, searching the child's face, examining her clothes. She looked to the doctor, who raised an eyebrow and tilted his head in a tiny nod of confirmation. She put a hand to her mouth.
What do I do? She whispered.
But before the doctor could answer, she spoke to the little girl. You've lost a bear, haven't you? A pair of deep brown eyes opened wider, inspecting this woman as if she thought she was someone she had once met.
Yes, she said.
Then follow me. I know exactly where it is. Polly held out her hand to her childhood self. The doctor watched, wanting to intercept, wanting to explain all sorts of things about what might happen if this sort of thing was allowed. But when young Polly put her tiny gloved hand into grown-up Polly's, none of these things did happen. So the doctor said nothing and followed them down the corridor to the room that was glowing fiercer than 100 suns, knowing that that was where adventure lay. "Who's this?" asked Ben as they found him still trying and failing to get Polly's bear from the shelf. "No time to explain," said Polly hurriedly. "What do you think, Doctor?"
"It looks like a very sophisticated armed force." "Nothing but cowards," said Ben, "using innocent children's toys."
The ground shook again, the orange light sparking into fire. Smoke came from somewhere.
"I don't think they like that," said Ben.
"Are these all lost toys?" asked young Polly. "That's a lot of very sad children."
The doctor stood and rubbed his chin in thought.
"I need to speak to the beans," he said, and took out his recorder.
"Here? Now?" said Ben.
Young Polly began to cry.
"My bear!" she sobbed. "I want my bear!"
As she cried, the lights became brighter, the humming louder, the smoke denser.
"Do that again, Polly," the doctor said.
"Doctor, she's just a little girl." Polly put her arm around the child and pulled her close.
"Please, Polly, how much do you want your bear back?"
Polly wailed. The ground shook.
"That's it," the doctor said. "The more you want it, the greater the force becomes. We need to trick whatever it is into believing the toys are unwanted. I think that's where their power lies, in need and want. This is how they will conquer, through attachment."
He took the tin out of his pocket and spoke to it.
"Attachment and whatever it is of theirs that you have," he said, "and I have a strong suspicion what that may be."
Polly couldn't say how she knew, but the tin was definitely expressing gratitude.
"You two ladies, all the toys that have name tags on them, remove them."
"But there's something stopping us touching them," said Polly.
"Right. Ben, take this."
He produced a large magic marker from his pocket.
"These toys aren't lost or found. Remove the sign on the door. Hurry!"
Ben took the pen and scribbled out "lost and found."
"I know,"
he said, and wrote in large thick letters, "for disposal." Within seconds the light had dimmed and the rumbling lessened.
"Good, good," said the doctor. "I think that's sorted that problem. Ladies?"
The two Pollys ran up and down the aisles, taking down toys and ripping off labels. With each one, the lights dimmed further.
"Why are we doing this?" young Polly asked.
"Toys without names aren't loved as much," said Polly, knowing that not to be true.
"That's not true. My bear has no name. There he is!"
Polly, now easily and without obstruction, took their bear off the shelf.
"Thank you! Thank you!"
Young Polly hugged the bear to her, squashing him close against herself. Polly looked to the doctor, who shook his head. A pale amber light still glowed softly like the first street lamp of dusk.
"Almost," the tin said.
While conflicting feelings fought to hold her heart, Polly, with great bravery, bent down to her younger self, eyes smarting with tears she dared not show. Gently she tried to prise the bear away from the child. "Sometimes, my darling little one, it's very hard to say goodbye to someone or something that you love. Do you remember Uncle Randolph?" The child nodded.
"Only in stories."
"You had to say goodbye to him so that he could fight a war." Tears dropped down the child's cheeks. "Now it's Bear's turn to go away."
"Will he come back? Uncle Randolph didn't."
"No, but he'll be doing a very important job. And I promise you that your life will turn out just fine." Polly looked to Ben, who was standing behind her. He squeezed her shoulder, and she put one hand over his, and the other she used to wipe away her own tears falling from the eyes of her younger self. Slowly, young Polly disentangled herself from the bear and held it out to the doctor.
"Goodbye, bear with no name," she said.
And as she did so, the amber light was overwhelmed by a turquoise blue, so bright, so loud, it swirled around the room, gaining volume, gaining brightness, gaining strength. The tin dissolved, and out poured a glory of colour and shape, dancing to a music that screamed with joy, laughter, and victory. The two Pollies and Ben had to shield their eyes from the sight, but when they next looked, the room bore no sign of what they had just witnessed. A dull fluorescent light hung over the shelves that were now empty of toys, but held cardboard boxes labelled with their contents, bags, umbrellas, even musical instruments. More familiar sounds were restored. Telephones rang, typewriters tapped, shoes stepped on polished floors.
"Come along, Pollies," said the doctor. "Time to go."
"Are you called Polly too?"
The child grinned at the older woman.
"I am. It's a very common name. I told Mummy that."
Polly smiled sadly and looked to the doctor, who shook his head. He whispered into Polly's ear,
"Take her to where she can be found. Don't stay. However tempting it is, leave her to be found."
Polly nodded and led the child away. Ben and the doctor walked behind the two girls, letting them be together.
"Did you just prevent a war?" asked Ben.
"Not really," replied the doctor. "I think it was more like two children squabbling in a playground over a toy."
"Oh," said Ben, "so we weren't ever in any real danger."
"Oh, I wouldn't say that," said the doctor. "I would never ever say anything like that."